Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
With big challenges ahead of us. Roads will need to be cleared, shelters need to be set up, and supplies need to flow in. We hope that this will all be possible in the coming weeks, as well as the returns of hundreds of thousands of people from the south to the north.
The ceasefire in Gaza has entered its second day. We'll go to Ramallah and to Jerusalem. Then ahead of Donald Trump's inauguration as president for a second time, thousands march in protest across the United States. We'll hear voices from the People's March in Washington, D.C., and the Peace Ball.
That it was Dr. King who said that that we cannot capitulate to finite disappointments. And what we do is we confront those finite disappointments with infinite hope. And that is what we are in the process of doing.
And on this federal holiday celebrating the birthday of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., we'll hear part of his last speech the night before he was assassinated.
Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead, but it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The ceasefire in Gaza has entered its second day. On Sunday, Hamas released three Israeli women who'd been held captive for 471 days since October 7, 2023. All three were reported in stable condition as they reunited with their families. Israel released 90 Palestinian prisoners, all women and children, the youngest being 15 years old. Under the terms of the ceasefire, Hamas will release 30 more Israeli captives, and Israel will release 1,890, that's 1,890 Palestinians, over the next 6 weeks. This comes as thousands of displaced Palestinians in Gaza have begun trying to return home now that Israel's 15-month bombing campaign has ended. Amal Abu Eita returned to her home in the largest refugee camp in northern Gaza, Jabalia, to find nothing but rubble.
We will try to close this door and stay here. Where should we go? Where should we go? Our home is gone. Our situation is destroyed. Where can we go? 10 children. Where should I go with them in the tents? Where should I go with them on the streets? We are trying to find a place to shelter in. What is our situation? The same as all Arabs. This is what eases our pain a little, knowing that our situation is like that of the rest of the Arabs.
The ceasefire went into effect on Sunday after Israel's cabinet approved the deal. Israel's far-right national security minister Itamar Ben-Gvir resigned from Netanyahu's cabinet in protest. On Saturday, Netanyahu said Israel reserves the right to resume attacks on Gaza.
Both President Trump and President Biden gave full backing to Israel's right to return to fighting. If Israel reaches the conclusion that negotiations of the second stage is fruitless, I appreciate it very much. If we need to resume fighting, we will do that in new ways, and we will do it with great force.
Israel killed about 200 Palestinians after the ceasefire was first agreed to on Wednesday. We'll have more on the Gaza ceasefire after headlines. We'll go to Jerusalem and Ramallah. President-elect Donald Trump and Vice President-elect J.D. Vance are being sworn in today inside the Capitol Rotunda. The inaugural ceremony was moved inside for the first time since 1985, due, President Trump said, to cold weather. Attendees at the inauguration include tech billionaires Elon Musk, Amazon founder and Washington Post owner Jeff Bezos, Meta's Mark Zuckerberg, Apple CEO Tim Cook, and Google's Sundar Pichai. On Sunday, Trump held a rally at the Capital One Arena, where he vowed to spend his first day back in the White House issuing a blitz of executive orders.
We're going to stop the invasion of our borders. We're going to reclaim our wealth. We're going to unlock the liquid gold that's right under our feet. Liquid gold. We're going to bring back law and order to our cities. We're going to restore patriotism to our schools, get radical left woke ideologies the hell out of our military and out of our government. And we are going to make America great again.
It's expected Trump will issue about 50 executive orders today after he's inaugurated. On Saturday, thousands of people gathered in Washington, D.C. for a People's March to protest Trump's inauguration. 300 other marches were held across the country. Well, our experts, excerpts from the D.C. protest later in the broadcast. Immigrant communities across the United States are fearing the coming days as Trump has threatened to begin carrying out mass deportations. Trump's border czar, Tom Homan, had said Chicago would be, quote, ground zero for the initial raids, but he's since walked back his comment. Jose Munoz is co-chair of the Illinois Latino Agenda.
Individuals and families are worried about what potentially could happen. They're worried about deportation. But the biggest blow to our community is living in fear. You know, when communities are living in fear, they don't go to work, they don't go to school. Long term, that has an impact not just on the immigrant communities, but it has an impact on our entire city and entire country as a whole, because we rely on immigrant labor. We have our growth, our population, our consumers. A very large portion of them are immigrants that are coming into the U.S. And so when they're in fear, it impacts all of us.
On Friday, Donald Trump launched his own cryptocurrency, which quickly soared to nearly $12 billion in value. Ethics experts question the legality of the move, which has already dramatically increased Trump's wealth by billions of dollars, at least on paper. Adav Noti of the Campaign Legal Center told the New York Times, quote, it's literally cashing in on the presidency. It's beyond unprecedented, unquote. On Sunday, Trump's wife, Melania, also launched her own cryptocurrency. This comes as Donald Trump has vowed to deregulate the cryptocurrency sector. The popular social media app TikTok's accessible again in the United States after Trump vowed to issue an executive order to delay a ban on the app, which is used by 170 million people in the United States. The app became briefly inaccessible in the U.S. over the weekend after the Supreme Court unanimously upheld a federal law to ban TikTok starting January 19th, unless its Chinese parent company, ByteDance, sold it to a U.S. buyer. Trump's proposed the U.S. government or a U.S. firm take a 50% stake in the company. TikTok chief executive Shouzi Chu is scheduled to attend Trump's inauguration today. Earlier today, on his last day in office, President Biden issued preemptive pardons for Dr. Anthony Fauci, retired General Mark Milley, and members and staff of the January 6th House Committee, including Liz Cheney, to protect them from possible investigations by the incoming administration. In a statement, President Biden said, quote, the issuance of these pardons should not be mistaken as an acknowledgement that any individual engaged in any wrongdoing, nor should acceptance be misconstrued as an admission of guilt for any offense. Our nation owes these public servants a debt of gratitude for their tireless commitment to our country, he said. On Sunday, Biden issued five other pardons, including one for the late Pan-Africanist and Black nationalist leader Marcus Garvey, who was convicted of mail fraud in the 1920s and was deported. Biden also pardoned New York-based immigrant rights leader Ravi Ragbir, who spoke to Democracy Now! Sunday night.
This has meant a lot for my family and myself because it stops the continued punishment that I've faced throughout the last 2 decades, where I every day was uncertain because I faced the possibility of deportation. In fact, in 2018, ICE made a concerted effort to kidnap me and with the intention to deport me. And it's only because of community support that I'm still standing.
Go to democracynow.org to see our last interview with Ravi Ragbir. Biden also pardoned gun violence prevention advocate Daryl Chambers, Virginia House Speaker Don Scott, and criminal justice reform advocate Kemba Smith-Pradia. President Biden on Friday declared the Equal Rights Amendment is now the law of the land.
Today, I affirm the Equal Rights Amendment to have cleared all the necessary hurdles to be added to the U.S. Constitution now. The Equal Rights Amendment is the law of the land now. It's the 28th Amendment to the Constitution now.
The announcement drew celebration and confusion. A White House official clarified Biden's statements represented his opinion that the ERA was ratified, though never codified in the Constitution, but that he was not issuing any sort of accompanying executive action. Advocates say Biden could have taken a further step and ordered the National Archives to publish the amendment and enter it officially in the Constitution, a move which would have triggered a legal battle with Republicans. The Biden administration's declassified details on how the United States secretly helped develop Ukraine's drone program. The New York Times reports the U.S. funded the effort and sent intelligence officers to Ukraine to help build the drones which have been used to attack and spy on Russia. In Iran, a gunman assassinated 2 high-profile judges who served on Iran's Supreme Court. The attack took place at the Palace of Justice in Tehran Saturday. Both of the judges were clerics who'd faced threats before for their role in the mass execution of Iranian dissidents in 1988. Colombian authorities estimate more than 80 people were killed over 3 days in northeast Colombia as fighting broke out between the National Liberation Army, known as the ELN, and former members of FARC amidst failed peace talks. Thousands of people have fled Colombia's Catatumbo region as a result. FARC disarmed under a 2016 peace deal, but a number of its former members remain active or have joined other armed groups. The government of President Gustavo Petro, who's vowed to end such violence in Colombia, has suspended talks with the ELN, which it accused of war crimes. The U.S. Justice Department has filed a lawsuit against Walgreens for its role in fueling the deadly opioid epidemic. The lawsuit accuses Walgreens of knowingly rushing to fill millions of unlawful prescriptions, including dangerous and excessive quantities of opioids, starting in 2012. Atlanta residents are demanding accountability after city workers killed Cornelius Taylor, an unhoused man, by bulldozing over him as they cleared an encampment near the Ebenezer Baptist Church ahead of MLK Day celebrations. Witnesses say the workers did not check the tents beforehand to make sure they were empty. The group Housing Justice League said the sweep was part of an effort to present a, quote, false sanitized vision of Atlanta, adding, quote, everyone deserves to live in dignity. And the leadership of the American Historical Association has vetoed a, quote, resolution to oppose scholasticide in Gaza, unquote, that was overwhelmingly backed by members of the AHA earlier this month. The group Historians for Palestine accused AHA leadership of pandering to the political class, adding, quote, the AHA is our organization. We urge historians to recognize this anti-democratic silencing as complicity in scholasticide, unquote. To learn more about the resolution, go to democracynow.org to see our interview with 2 AHA members after the vote took place at the business meeting overwhelmingly. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The ceasefire in Gaza has entered its second day. On Sunday, Hamas released 3 Israeli women who'd been held captive for 471 days since October 7th, 2023. All 3 were reported in stable condition as they reunited with their families. Israel released 90 Palestinian prisoners, all women and children, the youngest being 15 years old. Under the terms of the ceasefire deal, Hamas will release 30 more Israeli captives, and Israel will release 1,890 Palestinians over the next 6 weeks. This comes as thousands of displaced Palestinians in Gaza have begun trying to return home now that Israel's 15-month bombing campaign has ended. Amal Abu Eita returned to her home in the Jumalia refugee camp to find nothing but rubble.
We will try to close this door and stay here. Where should we go? Where should we go? Our home is gone. Our situation is destroyed. Where can we go? 10 children. Where should I go with them in the tents? Where should I go with them on the streets? We are trying to find a place to shelter in. What is our situation? The same as all Arabs. This is what eases our pain a little, knowing that our situation is like that of the rest of the Arabs.
The ceasefire went into effect Sunday after Israel's cabinet approved the deal. Israel's far-right national security minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir, resigned from Netanyahu's cabinet in protest. On Saturday, Netanyahu said Israel reserves the right to resume attacks on Gaza.
Both President Trump and President Biden gave full backing to Israel's right to return to fighting. If Israel reaches the conclusion that negotiations of the second stage is fruitless, I appreciate it very much. If we need to resume fighting, we will do that in new ways, and we will do it with great force.
Israel killed another 200 Palestinians after the ceasefire was first agreed on Wednesday. For more, we're joined by two guests. In Jerusalem, Gershon Baskin is with us, Middle East director of the International Communities Organization, a human rights advocacy group. He's a longtime back-channel negotiator with Hamas and ceasefire deals. His memoir is titled In Pursuit of Peace in Israel and Palestine. And in Ramallah, in the occupied West Bank, we're joined by Tala Nasser. She is a lawyer with the Palestinian prisoner and human rights organization, Admir. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Tala, let's begin with you. If you can talk about—we'll talk with Gershon Baskin about who the Israelis are, the three women who were released this weekend. I want to start with you asking about the 90 Palestinians and who they are, as you are a lawyer with the prisoners' organization.
Yes, so yesterday, Palestinian prisoners were supposed to be released after 3 p.m., but unfortunately, the Israeli authorities delayed their release until 3 a.m. Today. 92 Palestinian prisoners were released, including 69 female prisoners. Two of them are child prisoners. 20 of them are administrative detainees. 5 of them were sentenced prisoners, and 44 were under trial. While they also released 23 child prisoners, most of them were under administrative detention, and some of them were under trial. And also, 6 of the released prisoners yesterday were actually previously released in the November 23 exchange deal, and then they were rearrested again. So these are the Palestinians who were released yesterday, and of course we're waiting for the other phases or the other batches of the prisoners to be released.
And just for people to understand globally who don't know the Israeli system, when you say they were held administratively, you were saying they were held without charge or trial.
Yes, they were actually held without any charges, without any trial. It's based on a secret file that neither the detainee nor their lawyers know anything about the charges or the accusations and why they are arrested.
And overall, your feeling about the ceasefire, at least for these next 42 days?
We're actually concerned of what will actually going to happen in the next few weeks, because yesterday it was horrible. Families were actually waiting for long hours in front of Ofer prison. They were assaulted. The Israeli occupation forces started bombing the families, started using sound bombs, gas, rubber bullets, and live ammunition. There were lots of injuries at at all in front of Rafah prison. So also families were also assaulted in the occupied Jerusalem. They were summoned to Al-Maskubiyya interrogation center. They were subjected to arbitrary conditions that prohibited gatherings and banned marches and fireworks and prevented them from chanting slogans. So the situation is still, we're still concerned of the situation. We're hoping that it will continue, the Israelis will continue to release prisoners and to, of course, we have no guarantees they were not, will not be rearrested again, but we are hopeful that many other prisoners will be released, especially the ones who are serving life sentences.
Gershon Baskin, you're in Jerusalem right now. If you could respond overall to how the ceasefire was achieved, talk about the three Israeli women as well as the 92 Palestinians who were released.
Right, the ceasefire deal that was negotiated primarily in Doha over the last weeks, it happened because Donald Trump told Benjamin Netanyahu to make the deal now. He wanted this deal done before he entered the White House. The deal was actually almost the same deal that was presented by President Biden way back in May. And cynically, it wasn't achieved until a few days before January 20th, when Donald Trump takes the Oval Office. Steve Witkoff, the Middle East emissary of Donald Trump, worked hand in hand with Brett McGurk from the Biden administration to make sure that the deal was done in Doha. And as I said, it's more or less the same deal that was presented back in May. I have to comment, it is a bad deal. It's a bad deal for Israel. It's a bad deal for the Palestinians. It's a deal which will take months to implement and create a lot more suffering for the families of hostages, for the families of prisoners, and the chances of it derailing in the Gaza Strip are very high. The three women who were released are Roni Gonen, 24 years old, Emily Damari, 28 years old, and Doron Stanbrecher, 31 years old. Two of them were from the Kibbutz Kfar Aza next to the Gaza Strip, and one of them was taken from the Nova Festival on October 7th. They're all civilians. None of them are military. None of them had anything to do with the Israeli occupation. They were Israeli citizens trying to live their lives.
And the Palestinians that were released, and then the additional, what, I think, 1890 Palestinians who will be released, to underscore what Tala was just saying about the—well, they were all women and children, but the overall—the overwhelming majority had not been tried or charged.
Yeah, I understand there are about 1,000 administrative detainees who will be released in this first part of the deal for 33 of the Israeli hostages. 94 hostages will remain in Gaza until the negotiations are completed on phase two, which will begin on day 16 and are supposed to be completed by day 30 before we enter another 42-week period. Hopefully it will happen. Hopefully the ceasefire will hold, and this is supposed to lead to an end to the war. It seems to me that Hamas would not have agreed to enter into this two- or three-phase deal without having guarantees both from Qatar and from Egypt through the United States that, in fact, the war would end and will not continue beyond this first phase of the first 42 days. But we don't know that because Netanyahu has given alternative promises to members of the government that Israel reserves the right to return to war if the negotiations don't end up moving in the direction that they want.
And the significance of Ben-Gvir, along with another MK, member of Knesset, or known around the world as member of parliament, the significance of the far-right member of the cabinet and member of the Knesset, Ben-Gvir quitting?
Right. Well, Ben-Gvir also admitted that he was successful in holding up this deal for months, which should be criminal, and he should be treated as criminal in the eyes of the Israeli public. I started by saying that this is a bad deal, but a bad deal is better than no deal. Certainly, Ben-Gvir's resignation from the cabinet and not being our minister for national security is a cherry on the cake that was unexpected, and it certainly made the deal a little bit sweeter for us Israelis who would like to live in a normal country. Ben-Gvir is a danger to our society, is a danger to our democracy. I think he's a danger to the entire region. And the further away he is from power, the better it is for all of us.
Does he remain in the parliament or in the Knesset or just quit as a cabinet member?
He just quits as a cabinet member. He remains in the parliament, but a number of the parliamentarians from his party became members of parliament on what's called the Norwegian War here. When ministers enter the government, they can resign their Knesset seat, their parliament seat, and bring in additional people from the party. Apparently, two of the members of his party now have to also be removed from the Knesset, which is also a blessing.
And Bezalel Smotrich did ultimately, though he threatened to leave, remain.
Yeah, he remained. He cynically put out a tweet on X congratulating the return of the hostages that he tried to block. He voted against the deal. There's no end to the cynicism within the Israeli government.
Tala, if you can talk about the release of Akhlida Jarar, a Palestinian parliamentarian, a member of the PFLP, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine.
Yeah, so Khalida was released also yesterday. She was completely isolated from the outside world for 5 months now. She was released with a horrible, in a horrible condition, actually, because of the isolation, because of the starvation imposed against her and other women prisoners, because of the lack of personal hygiene tools, the confiscation of clothes and electrical appliances, the denial of medical care. So she was released in a very horrible situation, and people around the world saw the pictures of how she was released. And it's not only about Khalida Jarar, but it's also other women prisoners who were also released in a very bad situation, and they were subjected to different torture and ill-treatment methods, which led to their to them lose their, so much of their weight. They were starving inside the prisons, and that's why we saw them in this horrible situation.
I want to thank you both for being with us. Of course, we will continue to follow this extremely closely. Tala Nasser is lawyer with Admir, the Palestinian Prisoners Organization. She's speaking to us from Ramallah in the occupied West Bank. And Gershon Baskin, longtime back-channel negotiator with Hamas in ceasefire deals. Up next, ahead of Donald Trump's second inauguration as president, thousands marched in protest Saturday across the United States. We'll hear voices from the People's March in Washington, D.C., then to Angela Davis at the inaugural Peace Ball. Stay with us. Martini, my homeland, sung by journalists in Gaza 1 year after they first recorded in the midst of Israel's attacks. The song is based on a poem by the Palestinian poet Ibrahim Tukan from 1934. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. Ahead of President-elect Donald Trump's inauguration today, thousands march in protest across the United States Saturday. Democracy Now!'s team, we were in Washington, D.C. when thousands came out to join the People's March. Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. We're at the People's March in Washington, D.C., 2 days before the inauguration of Donald Trump. People are carrying banners that say, "We will not be silent. Together we can. Together we will. Your power, our power, people power." There are many people. One person was holding a sign that said, "MAGA, morons are governing America." And there are many other issues. People are talking about women's rights, trans rights, LGBTQ rights, talking about the rights of Palestinians. Palestinians, D.C., statehood, and much more. We'll talk to people in the crowd.
Trust black women! Trust black women!
How you doing? I'm Hope Giselle. I'm the executive director of the National Trans Visibility March, and I'm out here because all of us deserve the space to feel like we have a voice in democracy. All of us deserve to feel like human beings, and all of us deserve to have our rights respected. And so without a democracy, without a true democracy, we all fall to the wayside of a corruption and a government that does not see us as human beings, and I refuse to allow that to stand.